This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Willem Dafoe is starring in the new movie Shadow of the Vampire. The movie imagines life on the set during the making of the silent film classic Nosferatu. Dafoe is a movie star who is also a longtime presence in experimental theater. He's been a member of the avant-garde theater company The Wooster Group since 1977. His film career has been divided between saints and sinners. He was the villain in Streets of Fire and To Live and Die in L.A., played the nearly Christ-like Sergeant Elias in Platoon, and played Jesus himself in The Last Temptation of Christ. He co-starred in The English Patient and was the madman in Speed 2. I spoke to Willem Dafoe in 1997. You grew up in Appleton, Wisconsin, where I imagine there wasn't a lot of experimental theater.
No.
How did you discover experimental theater?
Well, I think I went to school for a little while in Milwaukee, very, very briefly, and there was a small company there called Theater X, and I worked with them for a while, and I also remember there was a very good small press bookstore in the lobby of that theater. And I started to read various journals that at the time seemed to me very esoteric and intellectually challenging, let's say. And there would be things about the performance group and Richard Foreman's work and Jerzy Grotowski and Robert Wilson. And I got very turned on by reading about these productions, about this theory. And then I worked with this company for a while, worked in Europe for a little while, and then went to New York totally intending to become a commercial theater actor because I found the life of working in a small collective was very frustrating. And I was ambitious, too. I mean, basically a Puritan from the Midwest. I had to go up there if I wanted to be an actor. An actor was about being very public with what you did. And when I got here, I just found myself drawn to a certain kind of work, and specifically the work of Elizabeth LeCompte. So I really just kind of knocked on their door. This is the, you know, short form, but knocked on their door and made myself available and insinuated myself into the company, made it so they couldn't work without me.
Well, I should mention that you and Elizabeth LeCompte have been partners on and off the stage for many years,
right?
And have a son together.
Right.
So what do you think it was that spoke to you about experimental theater? Was it something intellectual? Was it something something else?
I think, well, I'll go back to what my first impression was when I saw the Wooster Group work. I think I looked at these people and I thought, these people are doing this amazing thing publicly. They're finding, they're telling these stories that allow them to have, you know, personal revelation, some sort of self-realization in public. And it looks like they're interested in doing things that will change their way of thinking. Will liberate them, really, and take the audience with them in that change of mind, in that ability to look in different ways. That was one aspect. The other aspect is just the sheer pleasure, the beauty of the pieces. They brought me back to when I was a kid, when I loved animation, cartoons, really, so much. Because they were fluid and things transformed and they weren't trapped in a normal way of thinking. So I guess basically I looked at these people. They were very romantic figures. I thought, boy, they're turning their life into art. And it's extraordinarily beautiful.
So did you feel like you actually got that sense of personal liberation that you thought you were witnessing other people having when they performed?
I don't know. I mean, it's a process. And as you say, personal liberation, I mean, I get a little shy. I can't believe I quite said that on the air. But yes, I think I get a great pleasure out of performing. And at its best, what it does for me is, you know, it's all about trying to find in a simple way, trying to find truthful behavior in ways of relooking at things. And I think that's good training for living, even. I mean, frequently people ask you what the difference is between film and theater, and I used to, because there are many differences and it's quite complicated, I used to just kind of throw up my hands and say, well, it's all the same, it's all pretending. I mean, some of the external things are very different, but at the heart it's all pretending. But I've come to think that in theater, one huge difference is I love ritual very much.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the idea of basically getting a score and having to reinvent it. It's, you know, it's like, it's in our life, there's a lot of repetition. Getting up, going to bed, eating, all kinds of things. And how we live our life is, you know, is the quality of how present-minded we are and how aware we are and how we can invest these things that are so familiar to us. Where in film, you know, you're working on a scene for a day and then you either make it or you don't, and it kind of goes away. You aren't returning to the same turf over and over again. So in a funny way, it's always on my mind. I find myself always going back to the theater.
You've said about your face that you think it's a face of another era, not a modern face.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean by that?
Oh, I just look at myself and I don't know. It's just how people place and identify my face.
Mm-hmm.
And really my manner. I mean, it's very good as an actor in a fun way because people can't place you. But I find them often misidentifying where I come from and who I think I am.
I think part of the misidentifying comes from your name, Willem, W-I-L-L-E-M, right, which
no,
is not your birth name, actually. Yeah, but I think I always assumed you were of Dutch ancestry. And
right. Right, we don't even know that. I mean, Willem is a nickname that I picked up, and if I had to do it all over again, believe me, I would have been Bill or something like that. It would have made things a lot simpler.
You know, it's funny going from experimental theater to movies. In your early movies, you played the heavy. In The Loveless, you were the leader of a motorcycle gang. In Streets of Fire, you were the heavy who, you know, abducts the heroine. In Wild at Heart, you were a very
Bobby.
Obnoxious character with miserable teeth. What do you think it was that filmmakers saw in you that kept casting you as a heavy? Oh, To Live and Die in L.A., you were
mm-hmm.
the heavy. What was it that you think the film director saw in you that was different than what your colleagues in theater had seen in you?
You know, I think it has something to do with physiognomy, and it also has to do with what you project. And in the beginning of your career, my career, I think if you aren't conventionally handsome and you've got a different manner, and you cultivate a certain kind of toughness, which I think I did for, you know, probably personal reasons. A Midwestern guy, you know, coming to New York, dropping 3 economic classes and, you know, getting some attitude. all that comes together and makes this persona, I think. And in the beginning of working in movies, I think as sheerly as survival, just kind of intuitively, you start to create a persona. And I probably don't feel the same about that now, creating a persona, but I think that's what I was projecting. I think those directors found me and I found them. I mean, I went towards that. And then it got to the point, I think, where I had an interest in trying to change that, because once people started to respond to a certain kind of aspect of, you know, a certain character, I found the things that I was receiving as far as offers were not always complex characters. They were functions of the script, and they would just plug you in as a product. So then I think I fought to try to mix it up by doing different kinds of projects and different kind of characters. You know, I think people will always respond to me in villain roles. I don't know. Someone else has to say why.
Mm-hmm. So do you think that you cultivated this toughness when you got to New York because you had been so middle American, middle class before?
I think so. And it's just natural. As I said, it's a big, you grow up middle class and then you really do fall like three economic classes and you're dealing with people. You're living in bad neighborhoods. You're dealing with, a much more marginal society among your colleagues, and you're living with people that you didn't usually mix it up with. So I think you become a little radicalized politically, and you start to educate yourself in a different way. You start to identify, you aspire to be an artist. You start to identify with a certain kind of outsider position in the world. And that all feeds it.
My guest is Willem Dafoe. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Willem Dafoe is starring in the new movie Shadow of the Vampire. Let's get back to my 1997 interview with him. You know, we were talking about moving back and forth between the world of movies and the world of experimental theater and often playing the heavy in the movies. Are there kind of showy moves that really come across well in action films that you have to be careful to avoid when it comes to serious theater?
Showy moves.
In part because it's a transition from screen to stage, but
right.
Also, I don't know, there's a certain kind of large charismatic gesture that really works in action films. Action films are kind of about that.
Right.
And I'm not sure if that's what you want when you're in a small theater.
You know, one interesting thing that I'm keep on coming up against in my head, and I think this relates to what you're saying, so let me speak to it just a little bit, and I'll try to work it out on the air on your time. But is, for example, in Speed 2, you basically know what you have to do, and you do have a large gesture. There isn't a lot of... You try to build in a complexity, and you hope there is some ambiguity, but basically it's a very long, very large gesture. And in the selling of the movie, when you're doing your publicity and in a movie that's aimed for a big audience, you're like creating something that's basically recognizable. And a lot of acting in Hollywood is geared towards that. You're encouraged to make a persona, to make something that people know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have these characters act these things out in these stories. That's what all movie stars have in common. I'd say pretty much they make themselves into a product. So you're dealing with that on the one hand, and then on the other hand, you're an actor. And part of being an actor is to be totally mutable, to be totally invisible, to totally melt into the story. And that's always an interesting struggle. And when you go back to the theater, you're always reminded of that, I'd say, because you're reminded that your job is to serve the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so often in movies, certain parts of Hollywood encourage you to be the thing, and the movie serves you. And I think I struggle with that because basically at heart, I hope I have the power and the attractiveness of that, let's say, a movie star has. But at the same time, my conceit is I want to be an actor because I want to do all kinds of things. And I want to... be able to clean the slate, kind of the beginner's mind thing each time,
right.
In each outing.
Well, I like these points that you're making.
Well, to reinvent, because that's what I feel close to in my life, the impermanence, the transformation, the always things changing. That's when I feel alive. But when I have an obligation to make something and stick to it and guard that and protect that, then it's really oppressive, and I find that's where you start to creak creatively.
You must have odd ego transitions you have to make. Because, you know, in the movie world, you know, people have such big egos who are movie stars. And I don't know, I think a lot of movie stars are really used to being pampered and taken care of in every way. And then when you're working in a small experimental collective like the Worcester Group, it's about collaboration. And although I'm sure there is a lot of ego there, it's of a different sort.
Yeah, it's very complicated because I believe your best performing comes when you're serving something outside of yourself. And your best performing comes when you don't have an agenda, that something actually works through you. I find that most satisfying, and those are the performances I'm attracted to. I'm as an audience member, I'm not attracted to needy performers. But at the same time, you know, as I've expressed already, part of this whole game of making things has a lot to do with finding out about yourself and being, having these journeys be public journeys to find out who you are. So it's very schizophrenic, because somewhere I believe you should cultivate an egolessness in performing. But on the other hand, performing is all about dealing with the self. And maybe I'm tangled up in semantics here, but this is a dynamic that I'm dealing with all the time. I mean, I can play with it as opposites and all that, but I'm still not clear about the other end of the spectrum yet.
Yeah, but then there's also just the pure egocentrism of show business, you know, of the Hollywood world. Where
yeah, but that's the... See, that's one of the things that I love. There's a part of me that is absolute show trash, that, you know, wants to get up there and sing a song
me,
and,
me, me.
You know, take off my clothes and, you know, show off and have people think I'm wonderful. And then there's another part of me that's wants me to quietly work stuff out, you know, using these stories, using these characters as a mask, and have me be a agent and have it not be about me, and have people quietly watch this thing happen, and we hope for all of us that something interesting happens. So, I mean, I can live with that, but, you know, sometimes when I express some very lofty aspiration, then I have to laugh and I feel like a imposter, a liar, because I know the other end.
Right.
And they operate at the same time all the time.
In reading a bunch of articles about you to prepare for our interview, I came across a few, what kind of beefcake kind of photos? I mean, not heavy beefcake, but
right.
You know, like the movie star with his shirt unbuttoned,
yes,
and his
yes.
manly chest revealed. Uh-huh. And I'm wondering what it's like for you to do photo shoots like that, if you both enjoy it and see the absurdity of it. You know, again, having a foot in both worlds, in the major motion picture world and the experimental theater world.
I do, actually. I've always kind of liked having my picture taken. And I don't know why. I'm not that narcissistic. I guess... I like that. I must like that attention. I don't know what it is.
you like the beefcake thing? Where okay,
well, not the beefcake
thing.
You know, sometimes I'm in the mood for it, and sometimes I'm not. This is kind of a funny story. I think Annie Leibovitz shot me several years ago, and it was a period where, you know, when people were shooting me, they were always asking me to put on a leather jacket and hang a cigarette out of my mouth. And here she was, and I was excited to shoot with her. And she wanted me to put on a leather jacket and take off my shirt and that sort of thing. And I thought, oh, man, this is drag. Just because that image, that place for pretending wasn't living for me anymore. You know, I felt cornered. So I said, no. And I resisted her, and I resisted her, and we shot lots of other stuff. And then at the end, she was so nice. I said, oh, what the hell? And I said, okay, let's do a couple. So I took off my shirt, put on this leather jacket, and she shot about 3 shots. And one of them went on to be a picture that is like a postcard and is in a book, and I see it a lot, and it's a very beautiful picture. So who knows?
Well, we're out of time. I wish we had more time to talk, but unfortunately we don't. I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Sure. My pleasure.
Willem Dafoe recorded in 1997. He's starring in the new movie Shadow of the Vampire. It opens nationally next week. This is Fresh Air.